This is Audible.
Gildan Media presents Your Coach in a Box, affordable, life-changing audio programs.
Profit First by Mike Michalowicz, and read by me, Mike Michalowicz. Now, if you've heard some of my other books, you may know I have a preference to kind of share some extra bonus content and stories, and I'll be doing the exact same in this book too. So if you've read the book, and this is kind of a supplement to it, you're going to discover some new material, some new stories, and some new content. If you haven't got the book, well, maybe that's a good, the printed book, that is, maybe that's a good guide to follow along with. But you're going to find extra content here on the audio version. Now, a little story I want to start off with is, as I'm recording this, it is tax season, my favorite time of year, and I got a call from my accountant. He didn't estimate my taxes properly. And as he bared the news to me, I could tell on the other end of the line that he was ready for me to have an outlash of anger toward him for yet again not getting the taxes perfectly right. But Profit First prepared me for it. I live Profit First. I've been doing it ever since I conceived the system. So now it's almost 10 years of living Profit First. I first wrote about it in my book, The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. So I had the taxes reserved, and I wasn't caught off guard. And while it's no joy to pay more taxes than your accountant estimated, the Profit First system had estimated it for me, had the taxes reserved for me, and the check went out by the time the phone call was over. You're going to experience the same. That's my commitment to you. You're going to experience the same for your business. We'll have the money in the right bins, in the right places, for the right reasons, in advance, proactively. Yeah, your taxes will be reserved and paid for you, but man, we are going to make some serious, serious profit for your business. It's the foundation of your business, after all. I mean, listen, money isn't everything. I get it, and I don't feel that way. Some people say, oh my God, Mike, you sound like such a money grubber. The title, Profit First, do you care about people? Do you even care about the business's purpose? Yeah, I do, actually, more than anything. Profit is the important foundation. It's critical. And if we don't address profit first, it's like not putting blood in the body. It keeps the body alive. It must flow around. We must master profit in order to have a business that can do and live up to its purpose. That's why we have to put profit first. And I believe, heck, you should live a comfortable lifestyle, an amazing lifestyle. You should have the freedom to do what you want. And that freedom will serve you, your family, your friends, your relatives, but also your employees and the other people you impact. As you become more profitable, they'll become more profitable. I really do believe we can change the world together. But the first step's got to be with me and you right here, right now. So I'm all in on this, and I need you to be all in on this too. Let's go through this step by step. And one commitment I want from you is once we move forward, you will stick with this. Profit First is an easy, simple system. Meaning it's easy to understand. It may not be easy to stick with it. It's going to challenge some of your beliefs. It's going to force you to think in a more frugal way, a more innovative way. It's going to make you reconsider your business in so many ways that you can't anticipate right now. I'm just asking, let's go all in on this together. And I promise you, we'll make small steps, but once we make a step, no turning back. All right, that's your commitment. That's my commitment. Let's get into the book. By the way, I dedicated this book to my daughter, for my daughter Adela and her piggy bank. Introduction. I'm a fool. I never forgot the day Debbie Horovitz stood before me and cried. Through her tears, she kept babbling, I'm a fool, over and over again. Debbie, the entrepreneur behind the Social Sparkle and Shine Agency, a Toronto, California firm that specializes in social media services, had approached me at a creative live event in San Francisco. I was there to teach business growth strategies for my second book, The Pumpkin Plan. During one of the event sessions, I explained the basic concept of the Profit First system. One of the tools of Profit First is the instant assessment, a way to quickly gauge the real financial health of your business. When I ran the assessment on a volunteer attendee, the Profit First system clicked for everyone in the room. All Creative Live presentations are simultaneously broadcast live online, and 8,000 viewers had tuned in for my event. Tweets and comments started flying in from all over the world. Because the instant assessment is so fast and easy, I wasn't totally surprised to see the many comments from online viewers saying that they had assessed their business right then and there. Entrepreneurs, CEOs, freelancers, business owners, everyone shared how relieved they were to learn this simple method. It was as though they had experienced a sudden total clarity, an instant jolt of confidence about the money side of their businesses. And I suspect you are about to also. Then Debbie found me during the break and said, "Could we put my business through the instant assessment?" "Sure," I said. "It only takes a minute or two." Pen in my mouth, people bustling all around us, I ran through it right then and there, as if Debbie and I were in a world of our own. I scrawled her annual revenue number on the board. We ran the percentages. Debbie looked at the results and started to shake with sobs. She couldn't bear to look at where she was, or where the instant assessment said she should be. "I've been a fool," she said, tears streaming down her face. "Everything I've done over the last 10 years is wrong. I'm such a fool. I'm a fool. I am a fool." Let me admit right now, I am a co-crier. I do not deny that. When people cry, I go there with them. As soon as Debbie started, my eyes welled up with tears and the pen in my mouth dropped to the floor. I put my arm around her to try to comfort her. For 10 years, Debbie had put her soul into her business, giving it everything she had, sacrificing her personal life in order to give her business life, and yet she didn't have a dime or a successful business to show for it. Of course she knew the truth of her struggles all along, but she had chosen to dance around the truth and continued to live in denial. Putting your nose to the grindstone is a really easy way to cover up an unhealthy business. We think that if we can just work harder, longer, better, if we can just hold out, something good will happen one day. Something big is just around the corner, right? Something just like magic will wipe away all that debt, financial stress, and worry. After all, don't we deserve that? Isn't that how the story is supposed to end? No, my friend. That's only in the movies. Nothing like what we experience in real life. After Debbie ran the instant assessment, she had to face reality. Her business was sinking. For the prior 10 years, it had been a struggle to stay afloat, and it was taking her down with it. She kept saying, "I'm a fool. I'm a fool." Those words tore into me because I'd been there. I understood exactly how it felt to face the naked truth about my business, my bank account, my strategies, and my hard-fought success. I first designed Profit First to fix my own financial problems. It worked. Actually, it more than worked. It was a miracle. Years of struggle and financial troubles were fixed, not overnight, but in hours. I wondered whether Profit First would work just for me and my flawed brain, or whether it would serve others. So, I tried it with another business I co-own, a small leather manufacturer in St. Louis. It worked. I tried it with other businesses, large and small. It worked. I wrote about it in my first book in a small, easily overlooked paragraph in The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. And then something happened. I started getting email from other entrepreneurs who said they tried it and seen results. I wrote about it in The Wall Street Journal, and more success stories rolled in. After I wrote my second book, The Pumpkin Plan, I included the Profit First system in my speeches. It was after I met Debbie at the Creative Live event when I realized entrepreneurs needed more than just a paragraph or a chapter on the subject. Too many business leaders lived and worked in tormented servitude to their businesses. If I wanted to make a real difference for the Debbies and Mikes of the world, I knew I had to write a book about Profit First. Profit First was first published in 2014, and since then, tens of thousands of entrepreneurs have implemented the system and transformed their businesses. They are not only generating a serious profit, they are growing their businesses big time. Two birds, one stone. As I write this updated version of the book, I am 35,000 feet up in the air flying somewhere over Pennsylvania or Texas, or maybe it's Russia. I travel so much these days that I rely on the pilot to tell me where I am. My fellow passengers are watching a movie they've already seen four times, catching up on work or resting their eyes with a gaping mouth and occasional snort. A few are looking out the window at the clouds below. Me? I'm thinking about all the businesses we're flying over. There must be thousands of businesses below us at any given second. The Small Business Administration, also known as the SBA, states that there are 28 million small businesses in the United States alone. The SBA defines a small business as a company that generates $25 million or less in annual revenue. That includes my business, and I suspect it includes yours. Shoot, that even includes Justin Bieber's. His small business, music sales, pulled in only $18 million last year. So that's 28 million of us entrepreneurial weirdos in the United States alone. When you look at the full size of our global entrepreneurial family, you will see that the number of small businesses soars past 125 million. That's a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of people with guts, smarts, and determination who decided they had something of value to offer the world and took a shot at building something out of it. That's you, buddy, an entrepreneur. You might be in the early startup phase, your plans and dreams written on a cocktail napkin or toilet paper. You know who you are, my TPE peeps. If you're just getting started, props to you. You will be focusing on profit from day one, which will save your sanity, your bank account, and your ass. Maybe you've built a business or are managing one. Maybe you read the first incarnation of my book and you want to kick your profit-first system up a notch. Regardless of your entrepreneurial status, you are a miracle worker, so to speak. You convert ideas to reality. You find customers. You make stuff for them. You deliver a service to them, and they pay you for it. You keep selling. You keep delivering. You keep managing the money. All of us smart, driven people. Really smart, really driven. But there's one really friggin' nagging problem. 8 out of 10 businesses fail. And the number one reason they fail is a lack of profitability. According to a Babson College report, a lack of profitability is consistently the major reason cited for business discontinuation. Are you surprised? Probably not. I wasn't. It's true, and it makes me want to drown my sorrows in Margaritaville. The majority of small businesses and medium businesses and even some big ones are barely surviving. That guy driving the new Tesla whose children go to private school via chauffeur and who lives in a massive house and runs a $3 million company is one bad month from declaring bankruptcy. I should know. He's my neighbor. For real. The entrepreneur who said business is great at the networking event is the same woman who, because of her tears, later tries to ask me an indecipherable question in the parking lot. She's crying because she hasn't been able to pay herself a salary for almost a year and will soon be evicted from her home. It's just one of many similar conversations I've had with entrepreneurs who are afraid to tell the truth about their financials. The SBA Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award recipient who is changing the world, who is lauded as a member of the next generation of genius, who is destined to be on the cover of Fortune magazine because of his business acumen, is taking out bank loan after bank loan and racking up credit card debt to cover payroll behind the scenes. I should know, that was me, for real. How can that be? What's wrong with us? I mean, we get basically everything else right, or damn close. We made something out of nothing. And yet, why aren't most businesses profitable? I used to brag about the size of my business. I patted myself on the back for hiring more employees, for moving into a fancy schmancy office space, for making big sales. The truth is, I used all that as an excuse to cover up one ugly fact. My business had never once posted a profit. The reality was, my business, and I as a result, was drowning, and I kept trying to make it grow bigger to keep my head above water. I would say, I don't want to post a profit, of course. I just want to break even. That way I'll save on taxes. In other words, I'd rather lose $10 than have to pay the government $3. I continued to sink, month in, month out, year after year, constant stress. In fact, I survived check to check from the day I started my business until the day I sold it and cashed in. Whew, man, was I relieved. My business had been dragging me down, and I'd finally gotten rid of it. But that relief came with a bitter aftertaste. When I started the business, my goal wasn't mere survival. I mean, survival is the goal for POWs and refugees, certainly not what a business person would aim for. I was convinced I was the problem. For the longest time, I thought I was flawed, that my brain was messed up. It took me a long time to ask, what if I'm not the problem? What if the system I've been told to follow is flawed? Profit first works because it doesn't try to fix you. You work hard. You have good ideas. You already give 100% to your business. Profit first is a system designed to work with who you are already. You don't need to be fixed. The system does. Imagine that you were told you could fly if you simply flapped your arms, and then you were encouraged to jump off the nearest cliff. That's right, just flap your arms. You'll not only survive the bajillion-foot drop, you'll soar. What's that? You're plunging to your death? Quick, flap harder. Flapping your arms in order to fly is crazy because humans can't fly. Following a financial formula that isn't designed for how humans are naturally wired is like asking you to flap your arms harder and harder until you take off. Sorry, pal, it ain't gonna work no matter how hard you try. The system for profitability we've been using since the beginning of time is totally stupid. Actually, it's horrible. Yeah, sure, it makes mathematical sense, but it surely doesn't make human sense. While some businesses succeed by following the old system, they are the exception, not the rule. Relying on traditional accounting methods to grow profitably is the equivalent of telling you to jump off a cliff and flap the living crap out of your arms. Maybe two or three of the millions of people who try it by some miracle live. But pointing to the miraculous survivors and saying, "See, this works," is ludicrous. Millions die and a few survive. Yet we blindly say the arm-flapping, cliff-jumping system is the best way to fly. Absurd. If you aren't profitable, the natural assumption is that you haven't grown fast enough. I have news for you people. You're completely fine. You don't need to change. The old formula to profit is what's wrong. It needs to change. You know the formula I'm talking about, sales minus expenses equals profit? That crusty, bifocal-wearing, old-person-smelling formula at first blush makes total sense. Sell as much as you can, then pay the bills, and what's left over is profit. Here's the problem. There are never any leftovers. Flap, 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 splat. The old profit formula creates monsters of businesses. Cash-eating monsters. But we stay loyal to the formula, and things get worse. The solution is profoundly simple. Take your profit first. Yeah, it's that simple. What you're about to learn is so simple, so obviously effective, that you may hit your head and say, "Why the hell didn't I do this earlier?" But it may seem hard at times because you haven't done it before. It will challenge you because you'll be required to stop flapping your arms. You'll be required to stop doing what wasn't working. It's very hard to stop doing something even though it isn't working out for you. Remember that last nasty hangover when you said, "I'm never drinking again"? How long did that last? And ironically, I'm not a big drinker, but my last hangover was yesterday because yesterday was New Year's Day, and New Year's Eve I did a little party with my friend, actually a few of my friends, and one too many drinks. And then what did I say? I'm never going to drink again, and I think by the end of this week I'm going to be enjoying a margarita. You know what I'm talking about. Profit first will change you because you will have to totally change the way you think about business. And change is scary. Most people suck at trying new stuff, let alone sticking with new systems. Chances are you'll consider trying profit first, but you'll tell yourself it's so much easier to keep doing things the old way, even if the old way is slowly but surely sinking you and your business. So before we get started, let me tell you about the courageous people who went before you and jumped on the inaugural flight of Profit First. As of this very second, there are 128 accountants, bookkeepers, and coaches working hand-in-hand with me to guide entrepreneurs on an implementation of Profit First. And that's actually the number when I was writing it. Now it's 162. No worries. You can absolutely do this on your own, but for some people, having an accountability partner who knows the ins and outs of their industry, who can guide them step by step, is a better approach. Just so I can show you the power of our Profit First professionals, I'm going to stick with the number 128, even though we have grown. Of these 128 Profit First professionals, again, we call them PFPs, on average, we've directed the Profit First implementation of 10 companies per PFP. That means we have guided 1,280 businesses to success using Profit First. But the majority of people who've read Profit First so far, I can only assume, have followed the process on their own. I get roughly 5 emails a day, every day, from entrepreneurs who tell me they have started the Profit First process or have used it to transform their business. Over a 2-year period, that is 3,650 emails of new implementations. But I know that even more people read the book and just do it without ever saying a thing. So my best estimate on the high end is that more than 30,000 companies are now doing Profit First. Even if that estimate is spot on, we have barely scratched the surface. 30,000 is a nice number, but when compared to 125 million businesses, we are not even at the starting line. So let's move this puppy forward and let's start with you. But first, I'd like to introduce you to Keith Fear. Keith is a longtime fan of my books. I know because he emailed me when I first launched The Pumpkin Plan. He fell in love with the book, he tells me, and his hot air balloon business skyrocketed as a result. His business grew, but his profits didn't. He actually surpassed $1 million in revenue and still had to have a separate full-time job just to make ends meet. Then he read Profit First and did nothing. Nothing at all. Why? Because Keith couldn't imagine Profit First would work. He had been trying to flap his arms all his life, which seems particularly strange when you fly balloons for a living, and the feedback has been the same. Flap harder. The concept of taking his profit first before anything else was so unfamiliar that it didn't seem possible. But after 2 more years of check to check, panic to panic survival, he gave in and gave up the familiar and decided to give it a shot. The results were, well, I'll let Keith explain as he wrote in his letter. Mike and team, I thought I would take a moment and share something with you. I just finished reading Profit First for the umpteenth time and actually had to buy a new copy. I kind of wore out parts of the first copy and I had then gave it to a friend to help them out. I own and operate a hot air balloon ride business. We have operations in St. Louis, Missouri, Albuquerque, and Taos, New Mexico, and now also in Cottonwood, Arizona, near Sedona. When I read your book for the first time, I thought you had lost your mind. No way could this work. So for the last few months of 2014, I did nothing. I kept doing things the way I was. After all, I was making a small profit, but my cash flow wasn't the best. It was all I could do to deal with the cash issues, honestly. Finally, about the beginning of this year, I read the book again and, this time, started trying it. To give you an idea of what this has done for us, at one point early in 2015, our net profit year over year from year to date 2014 versus 2015 was up 1,721%. Nope, no typo. I truly am not kidding. We ended 2015 with net profit up 335.3% overall. On top of that, we ran about a 22% net profit percentage. Keith. Keith's business was saved by Profit First. Today, his business is thriving, and so is mine. Profit First saved my business and ensured that every new business I started would be profitable from day one. Yes, day one. The day I opened my newest venture, Profit First Professionals, I did two things. I signed the incorporation documents and then went straight to the bank to open my 5 foundational Profit First accounts. To date, Profit First Professionals is the most profitable business I've ever owned, by a long shot. It's not the biggest I've owned, at least not yet, but it is posting profits that are 1,000% bigger than the best year of any of my prior companies, which sold for millions. That is not a typo. 1,000% more profitable. This company is not even 2 years old and is growing so strongly that it will likely be the biggest company, on a revenue basis, that I've ever owned. Now, one thing that's important that I share with you is I share my numbers to show you the impact. I am not here to brag about success. There are many, many entrepreneurs that have been wildly more successful in their businesses. What I do want to implore is the impact of Profit First. If there was anyone that needed the system desperately, it was me. And if there's anyone who wanted to resist this, it was me. I was steeped in grow, 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 and that profit was the bottom line, the year end, the final take. Always saying that profit was last. But I was becoming desperate. And that's why I implemented Profit First. The impact for me has been profound. I live it daily. It is so important to me and so important to the success I've subsequently had. So again, I am not telling you these numbers to say, oh, look how successful I am. I'm so great. I'm not. I'm an ordinary guy. You and I are in the same boat. We may just be in different parts of the boat at the moment. And this is the path to the shoreline. All right, let's get back to the book. Profit First, I promise, will do the same for you. If you need to make your first profit or just need to amplify the profits you already have, this is the path. Helping you and all of our fellow entrepreneurs become more profitable is my life's purpose. I am flying all over America and beyond to speak about Profit First. Tomorrow, I will speak to more than 1,100 pharmacy owners at an event in Houston, then to 25 people, quite frankly, if I'm lucky, 25 people, in Casper, Wyoming. Then I'm heading over to New Orleans to talk with 200 folks in the morning, and then a panic dash via plane, train, and Uber to Washington, D.C. for an evening keynote. Then I'll travel abroad for more events. In between, I will do interviews for about 4 podcasts a day, recording my own podcast, the Profit First Podcast, available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, all those podcatchers, and updating this book at night. I do all of this with joy. I will teach this to anyone and everyone. I will not stop. I am here to eradicate entrepreneurial poverty. At Creative Live, after Debbie calmed down a bit, I said, the last 10 years were not wasted. I understand you feel that way right now, but it's not true. You needed to experience those years to get you where you are today, here with me, doing this. You needed to reach a point where enough is enough. To finally change, she needed her enough is enough moment. We all do. The truth is, Debbie is far from a fool. Fools never seek out answers. Fools never realize there's a different way, even when it's staring them in the face. Fools don't admit they need to change. Debbie faced the music, realized what she was doing wasn't working, and decided she would not stand for it anymore. Debbie is smart and courageous, and a hero too. She implored me to put her story in this book and not cloak her name. Debbie wanted you to know you're not alone. You started your business, I suspect, for 2 reasons. First, to do something you love. And second, for financial freedom. You did it for some degree of wealth. You did it to put profit in your pocket. That's why this book exists. We're going to put profit in your pocket, starting today, literally today. Your profit will start today and will occur permanently. All you need to do is commit to study this and then do it. Don't skip the doing. Please do not skip the doing. You can't listen to this book, think awesome concept, and then go back to business as usual. You need to get off your butt. As Debbie did, you need to push past your feelings about the choices you've made in the past. And like Keith, you need to put this into action as you read the book and follow the action steps at the end of every chapter. Your profitable life depends on it. I want your profitability more than anything. I know it will bring you stability in your business and in your life. And I know you are the seed for other entrepreneurs, your employees and contacts, and perhaps even family and friends to do the same. Join me. Let's eradicate entrepreneurial poverty together. Since I published the first edition of Profit First 2 years ago, I've received tons of feedback and questions that have given me ideas for improvement. I've also learned of dozens of shortcuts, tweaks, and solutions that individuals have discovered in their own implementation of Profit First and were kind enough to share with me. All these streamlined improvements, new advanced concepts, and clarified solutions are in this revised and expanded edition of Profit First. If you read the first edition of Profit First, you will find the core systems haven't changed a bit. It is foundationally identical. But this revised and expanded Profit First is packed with new knowledge, new stories, and new, easier techniques. If you are new to Profit First, you have the best of the best in your hands. The implementation of Profit First in your business will be easier, faster, and better than ever before. Get ready. We're going to make your business permanently profitable, starting with your very next deposit. Before we dig into chapter one together, I just want to tell you a little technique that I used in this version of Profit First, this revised and expanded version. I use a technique that's called front loading. Many authors do that, and it's particularly popular nowadays because the reader's attention spans have shortened and shortened and shortened, as I'm sure you're well aware. Well, front loading is where you put all of the actionable, relevant content right up front. You dig into the details and some of the how-to techniques as you develop the rest of the book, but right in the beginning, you give all the meat and potatoes. The reason is many readers will stop a book by chapter one, two, or three, and if they're done there and you haven't developed the whole system for them, you're in real trouble. So everything is right in the beginning. If some of the stuff goes over your head, it's because it's front-loaded. I want to make sure that I'm delivering the system to you right up front. I'm explaining as simply as I can, and that you're able to take action immediately. I just ask that you devote the time then to listen to the rest of it if there's still some hanging chad, so to speak, and you're a little bit lost in the rest of the content. I'll dig in deeper as we move along. The whole book is rich in content, so don't get me wrong. You should be listening to the whole thing, but I did front load the book just in case you have a very, very short attention span. Okay, let's dig into chapter one together. Chapter one. Your business is an out-of-control, cash-eating monster. No matter how many years you've been at the grind, you're probably well aware of the statistic that roughly 50% of businesses fail within the first 5 years. What they don't tell you is that those failed entrepreneurs are, in fact, the lucky ones. The majority of businesses that survive are racking up debt, and their leaders, perhaps you, are perpetually stressed. Most entrepreneurs are living a financial nightmare, one that's populated by Freddy Krueger or Frankenstein's monster in its raw, unadulterated scariness. In fact, I am convinced that I am Dr. Frankenstein. If you read Mary Shelley's classic Frankenstein, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The good doctor reanimated life. From mismatched body parts, he stitched together a living being more monster than man. Of course, his creation wasn't a monster at first. No, at first it was a miracle. Dr. Frankenstein brought to life something that, without his extraordinary idea and exhaustive hard work, could not exist. That's what I did. That's what you did. We brought something to life that didn't exist before we dreamed it up. We created a business out of thin air. Impressive, miraculous, beautiful. Or at least it was until we realized our creation was actually a monster. Stitching together a business with nothing but a great idea, your unique talents, and whatever few resources you have at hand is most certainly a miracle. And it feels like one too, until the day you realize your business has become a giant, scary, soul-sucking, cash-eating monster. That's the day you discover you too are an esteemed member of the Frankenstein family. And just as happened in Shelley's book, mental and physical torment ensues. You try to tame the monster, but you can't. The monster wreaks destruction at every turn, empty bank accounts, credit card debt, loans, and an ever-increasing list of must-pay expenses. He eats up your time, too. You wake up before sunrise to work, and you're still at it long after the sun goes down. You work and work, yet the monster continues to loom. Your relentless work doesn't free you, it further drains you. Trying to keep that monster at bay before it destroys your entire world is exhausting. You suffer sleepless nights, worries about collection calls, sometimes from your own employees, and a near constant panic about how to cover next week's bills with a few dollars and the lint in your pocket. Didn't you start a business so that you could be your own boss? Now it looks as though this monster is the boss of you. If you think operating your business is closer to a horror story than to a fairy tale, you're not alone. Since I wrote my first book, The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, I've met tens of thousands of entrepreneurs. And let me tell you, most are struggling to tame the beast that is their business. Many companies, even those that appear to have it all together, even the big guys who seem to dominate their industries, are one bad month away from total collapse. My own wake-up call came in the form of my daughter's piggy bank. Now, before I share that story, I want to share the story of Bravado. I'm a member of some entrepreneurial organizations and membership places where entrepreneurs congregate. And for years, I was always blown away by how successful all the people I was with were and how much I struggled, until I found out it's just a constant lie fest. And it's not like people are lying to lie. They just want to bend the truth to feel good about themselves. Ask an entrepreneur at one of these events, how's business going? Great. How big is your business? Huge. We're taking off. Best year ever. And that guy's struggling to pay bills. How's the business now? Great. Just landed our biggest client ever. Who's not paying the bills? And we don't know how we're ever going to collect it. There's a need to pound our chests as entrepreneurs. And part is to keep our own ego afloat. If we truly shared the struggles we had financially, maybe it would just pull the rug out from under us and we'd wrap things up. But kind of like Facebook, where everyone's having an amazing day yet again, it's not the truth. Most entrepreneurs are struggling. And when I became more intimate with many of my colleagues in the entrepreneurial space, as I started to get the real stories from them, often after a margarita or two, that's when I found out most entrepreneurs are struggling from a kind of real world experience, not just the statistics, but from talking with people. These big businesses that are pounding their chest aren't necessarily pounding money into the business bank accounts or not necessarily hitting it out of the park. So don't let that bravado catch you off guard. They may be lying to save their own ego. Don't let it damage yours. It's okay if you have struggled financially. It's okay if you haven't been profitable. We're going to fix that. But don't think you are alone on this. There's a lot of us with you. A lot of us have gone through this, or a lot of us, unfortunately, more of us are going through this now. Now let me tell you my story about the piggy bank. The piggy bank that changed my life. I lost my way the day I received a check for $388,000. It was the first of several checks I would receive for the sale of my second company, a multi-million dollar computer forensic investigation business I had co-founded, to a Fortune 500 firm. I had now built and sold two companies, and that check was all the proof I needed that my friends and family were right about me. When it came to growing businesses, I had the Midas touch. The day I received the check, I bought three cars, a Dodge Viper, my college fantasy dream car, and what I have subsequently found many people identify as the "that guy must have a tiny penis" car, something I'd promised I would get for myself one day when I made it. I'm referring to the Dodge Viper, not the tiny penis. And a Land Rover for my wife, and a spare, which was a tricked out BMW. I had always believed in frugality, but now I was rich, with an ego to match. I joined the private club, the one where the more money you give, the higher they place your name on the member's wall. And I rented a house on a remote Hawaiian island so my wife, my children, and I could spend the next 3 or so weeks experiencing what our new lifestyle would be like. You know, how the other half lives. I thought it was time to revel in the money I had created. What I didn't know was that I was about to learn the difference between making money, income, and taking money, profit. These are two very, very different things. I launched my first business on ambition and air, sleeping in my car or under conference room tables in order to avoid the cost of hotels when visiting clients. Now, this is a true story. I would sleep under conference room tables, which sounds kind of weird, but let me tell you how I ran the process. When I worked for one of my clients, they were a hedge fund client, they would reimburse us for a hotel stay because we'd work often well into the late morning or early morning, as it were. What would happen was we'd come in around 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening when trading was done for the day. We'd start work at 6, but we'd work till about 3 or 4 in the morning, repairing the computers, upgrading the systems. And then at 3 o'clock, we'd have to leave because the traders would start arriving at 5 in the morning for early trading. So the hedge fund would give us money up front, a per diem, if you will, so we could stay at a local hotel. Well, that $100 per diem, that would pay for groceries. So I'm going to stay in the conference room. But here's the deal. I had to set the alarm when I left. So what I would do, when I'd wrap up at 2 or 3 in the morning, I'd walk over to the alarm panel, set the alarm. Instead of leaving the room or leaving the building, I would sprint to the conference room, dive under the conference table, the one spot where the motion detectors couldn't sense me, and sleep there for a few hours before I drove home. It was just too risky to drive home being that tired. But God forbid I had to go to the bathroom or something. When I would get up, the motion detector would kick off and give me 30 seconds to sprint back to the panel, undo the alarm, use the restroom in the hallway, and go through the process again. The alarm never went off. I made it every single time. And I'll tell you, it was well worth it. It fed my family for quite a long period. All right, let's get back to the book. So imagine the surprised look from my wife, Krista, when I asked the sales guy at the dealership for the most expensive Land Rover. Not the best Land Rover, not the safest Land Rover, the most expensive Land Rover. He skipped his way to the manager doing a giddy hand clap. I'm still so embarrassed the way I behaved. Krista looked at me and said, "Have you lost your mind? Can we really afford this?" Full of snark, I said, "Can we afford it? We have more money than God." I will never forget the stupidity coming out of my mouth that day. Such disgusting words. Such a disgusting ego. Krista was right. I had lost my mind. And, at least for the moment, my soul. That day was the beginning of the end. I was well on my way to discovering that while I knew how to make millions, what I was really, really proficient at was losing millions. It wasn't just the lifestyle I'd bought into that caused my financial downfall. The trappings of success were a symptom of my arrogance. I believed in my own mythology. I was King Midas reinvented. I could do no wrong. And because I had the golden touch and knew how to build successful businesses, I decided that investing in a dozen brand new startups was the best way to use my windfall. After all, it was only a matter of time before my entrepreneurial genius rubbed off on these promising companies. Did I care whether the founders of these companies knew what they were doing? No, I had all the answers. Read that with a massive douche emphasis. I assumed that my golden touch would be more than compensated for their lack of business experience. I hired a team to manage the infrastructure of all these startups, accounting, marketing, social media, web design. I was sure I had the formula for success. A promising startup, the infrastructure, and my incredible, superior magic touch. More douchey emphasis there. Then I started writing checks. $5,000 to one person, $10,000 to another. Every month, more checks, and still more. One time, I cut a check for $50,000 to cover expenses for one of these companies. I was focused on one thing, and one thing only, growth. Mindlessly throwing money at startup companies wasn't even in alignment with my values about money. I was a bootstrapper and proud of it. Still, I was blind to my mistakes. I was all pump and dump. Grow the business, then sell them. In retrospect, it was clear that I would not be able to grow all of these companies to the point where they would eventually become niche authorities, as I had with my two previous companies. There was never enough revenue to cover the ever-increasing mountain of bills. Because of my massive ego, I didn't allow the good people who started these businesses to become true entrepreneurs. They were just my pawns. I ignored the signs and kept funneling money into my investments, sure that King Midas would be able to turn it all around. Within 12 months, All these companies I invested in, except one, had gone belly up. When I started writing checks to pay bills for companies that had already folded, I realized that I was no angel investor. I was the angel of death. It was a monumental disaster. Scratch that. I was a monumental disaster. Within a couple of years, I lost nearly every penny of my hard-earned fortune. Over $500,000 in savings, gone. A much larger, embarrassingly larger, amount of investment money, gone. Worse, I had no incoming revenue. By February 14th of 2008, I was down to my last $10,000. I will never forget that Valentine's Day. Not because it was so full of love, even though it was, but because it was the day I realized that my old adage, when you hit rock bottom, the only way to go is up, is total bullshit. I discovered that day that when you hit rock bottom, sometimes you get dragged along the bottom, scraping your face on every one of those rocks until you're battered, bruised, and bloodied. That morning, I got a call at my office from Keith, my accountant, not to be confused with Keith, the hot air balloon guy. He said, "Good news, Mike. I got a jump start on your taxes this year and just finished your return for 2007. You owe only $28,000. I felt a sharp pain in my chest, like a knife stabbing me. I remember thinking, is this what it feels like to have a heart attack? I would have to scramble to get the $18,000 I didn't have, and then figure out how to cover my mortgage the next month plus all of the small recurring unexpected expenses that added up to a whole lot of cash. As Keith wrapped up the call, he said that the bill for his services would arrive on Monday. How much? I asked. $2,000. I felt the knife twist. I had $10,000 to my name, and bills totaling three times that amount. After I ended the call, I put my head on my desk and cried. I had gone so far astray from my values, from who I was at my core, that I had destroyed everything. Not only could I not pay my taxes, I had no idea how I would provide for my family. At the Michalowicz household, Valentine's Day is a legit holiday, on a level with Thanksgiving. We have a special dinner together, exchange cards, and go around the table sharing stories about how we love each other. This is why Valentine's Day is my favorite day of the year. Typically, I would come home with flowers or balloons or both. That Valentine's Day, I came home with nothing. Though I tried to hide it, my family knew something was wrong. At the dinner table, Krista asked if I was okay. That was all it took for the dam to break. The shame was too great. I went from offering up forced smiles to sobbing in a matter of seconds. My children stared at me, shocked and horrified. When I finally stopped crying enough to speak, I said, "I lost everything, every single penny." There was total silence. I slumped over in my chair. The shame was too great for me to face my family. Not when all the money I had earned to support them was gone. Not only had I failed to provide for my family, my ego had stolen it all away. I felt pure, unadulterated shame about what I had done. My daughter, Adela, who was 9 years old at the time, got up from the table and ran to her bedroom. I couldn't really blame her. I wanted to run away too. The silence continued for two painfully awkward minutes until Adela walked back in the room carrying her piggy bank, the one she had received as a gift when she was born. It had clearly been cared for. Even with all those years of use, there wasn't a single chip or crack on the bank. She had secured the rubber stopper in place with a combination of masking tape, duct tape, and rubber bands. Adela set her piggy bank down on the dining room table and slid it toward me. Then she said the words that will stay with me until the day I die. "Daddy, we're going to make it." That Valentine's Day, I woke up feeling like Debbie Horowitz felt after her instant assessment. Like a fool. By the end of the day, I'd learned what net worth really is, thanks to my 9-year-old daughter. That day, I also learned that no amount of talent, ingenuity, passion, or skill would change the fact that cash is still king. I learned that a 9-year-old girl had mastered the essence of financial security. Save your money and block access to it so it doesn't get stolen by you. And I learned that I could tell myself that my natural aptitude for business, my relentless drive, and my solid work ethic could overcome any cash crisis. but it would be a lie. Running the instant assessment can be like having a bucket of ice water dropped on your head. If you did the ice bucket challenge a couple of years ago, you know the spine-shuddering chill I'm talking about. Or it can seem like the most humbling moment of your life, like when your daughter volunteers her savings to save you from the mess you made. But no matter how sharp the pain is, it's better to face it than continue to live and operate your business in denial. Money problems. You've probably put a lot of work into growing your business. You are probably good or great at that part. That's awesome. And that's surely half of the equation. But colossal growth without financial health will still kill your company. With this book, you have an opportunity to master money. Money is the foundation. Without enough money, we cannot take our message, our products, or our services to the world. Without enough money, we are slaves to the business we have launched. I find it hilarious because, in large part, we started our business because we wanted to be free. Without enough money, we cannot fully realize our authentic selves. Money amplifies who we are. There isn't a single ounce of doubt in my mind that there is something big you are intended to do on this planet. You wear the cape of what I believe is the greatest of all superheroes, the entrepreneur. But your superhero powers can only yield as much power as your energy source provides. Money. You need money, superhero. When I sat down to evaluate where I went wrong, I realized that while my own spending and arrogance definitely played a part, I also lacked knowledge. I had mastered how to grow businesses quickly, yet I never really graduated to understanding profitability. I'd learned how to collect money for sure, but I had never learned how to keep it, how to control it, or how to grow it. I knew how to grow a business from nothing, working with whatever resources I had. But as revenue increased, so did my spending. I discovered that this was the way I ran both my personal life and my business. I took pride in making magic happen with pennies in my pocket. But as soon as I got some real cash, I made sure that I had a very good reason to spend it. It was a check-to-check lifestyle, but sustainable, as long as sales were sustained and did not dip. While my companies grew explosively, I still operated them on a check-to-check basis. And I had no idea that this was a problem. The point was to grow, right? Increase sales, and the profit will take care of itself. Right? Wrong. Money problems occur when one of two things happen. Sales slow down. The problem here is obvious. When you operate check to check and sales slow down, when one of your big clients goes out of business or that big deal you were banking on falls through, you won't have enough to cover expenses. Sales speed up. This problem here is not obvious, but it is insidious. As your income climbs, expenses quickly follow. Big deposits feel great, but they are irregular. Consistent incoming cash flow is hard to sustain. A great quarter can trick you into believing your business is on a permanent upswing, and you start spending like this is the new normal. But drought periods come quickly and unexpectedly, causing a major gap in cash flow. And cutting back on expenses is nearly impossible because our businesses and personal lifestyle is locked in at our new level. Exchanging the newly leased car for a rust bucket, laying off employees because we're overstaffed, saying no to our partners, all of this is very hard to do because of the agreements and promises we made. We don't want to admit we've been wrong in how we've been growing our businesses, so rather than reduce our costs in any meaningful way, we scramble to cover ridiculously high expenses. We steal from Peter to pay Paul, hoping for another big payout. Sound familiar? Thought it might. Over the last 8 years, I connected with entrepreneurs at every level of growth. And this top line, revenue-focused, check-to-check methodology is more common than you may realize. We assume that multi-million dollar companies are turning big profits. But it's rare to find a truly profitable business. Most entrepreneurs are just covering their monthly nut, or worse, and accumulating massive debt. Without an understanding of profitability, every business, no matter how big, no matter how successful, is a house of cards. I made a lot of money with my first two businesses, but not because I ran a tight fiscal ship. I was just lucky enough to keep the plate spinning fast enough and the company growing big enough that someone else was willing to buy it and fix the financial problems. Bigger is not better. Why the hell is success constantly defined by applying the supersize me principle to your business? Does more revenue mean you are more successful? No. I know far too many big businesses with owners who are in pure panic and use lawn furniture to decorate the inside of their houses because they have to funnel every spare penny into their business to keep them from sinking. Is that success? Hardly. Growth is the battle cry of nearly every entrepreneur and business leader. Grow, grow, grow. Bigger sales, bigger customers, bigger investors. But to what end? Bigger business means bigger problems for sure. Yet it surely does not guarantee bigger profits, especially when profit is a hopeful residual. Growth is only half the equation. It is an important half, but still only half. Have you ever seen the guys at the gym with the massive arms and heaving chests? The ones as big as oxen who also have the toothpick legs? They're only working half the equation and have become unhealthy freaks as a result. Sure, that guy can throw a monster punch, but God forbid he needs to step into it or move a little. His puny legs will give out instantly. He'll curl up on the floor and cry like a baby. A little mutant baby. Most business owners try to grow their way out of their problems, hinging salvation on the next big sale or customer or investor, but the result is simply a bigger monster. And the bigger your company gets, the more anxiety you deal with. A $300,000 cash-eating monster is much easier to manage than a $3 million one. I know. I've survived operating both. This is constant growth without concern for health. And the day that big sale or big customer or investor doesn't show, you will fall to the ground and curl up crying like a baby. Jason Fried, co-founder of Basecamp, wrote an article for Inc. in which he talked about the demise of his favorite Chicago pizza joint. The owners did everything right, except that they grew too fast. After building their business slowly, they suddenly scaled from 20 to 40 locations.